Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome. Good to have you all with us today. We take a look at our day in history first, October the 1st on this day in history. And since we are broadcasting and our station is part of Morgan State University, let me say this day in history has a special meaning for Morgan State University. This is the day in 1872 that Morgan State College opened its doors. Happy birthday, Morgan State.
I didn't know that.
Seaship? This is also the day in 1903 that Vladimir Horowitz, the great pianist, was born on this day. This is the day that a poet that many people do not know, but I actually enjoy a great deal, was born in 1919. Marju Sultanpuri, this Indian poet and songwriter, was born on this day in 1919. Walter Matthau, the great American actor, in 1920. In 1924, Jimmy Carter was born, our 39th president, Nobel Prize Peace Laureate as well. William Rehnquist, 16th Justice of the Supreme Court, was born on this day in 1924, as well as the great singer and actress Julie Andrews in 1935. And Donny Hathaway, maybe we'll hear some of his music today with any luck. He was born this day in 1945, one of our great performers. And this is the day that Mark McGuire was born in 1963. People still trying to figure out what is his real body, but that's another question. We won't go into that today. And this is the day in 1985, one of America's most influential writers died, E.B. White. He wrote things like Stuart Little, Charlotte's Web. But he also wrote a book that should be put back in all of our schools, Elements of Style.
Oh, for sure.
That teaches one how to really write and use the English language. This is the day in 1992 that Petra Kelly, a German Green politician, was killed by her then lover, her former general, Gert Bastian. She was 44, he was 69, and she was a leader of movements in Germany, was murdered on this day. This is the day in 1996 that Pat McGowan, who was a part of the Irish Republican Army, who took part in the 1991 hunger strike in the prisons, was actually elected to the Belfast City Council. Died, I said, in 1996. He was elected to the Belfast City Council in 1989. Richard Avedon was born this day in 2000, died in 2004. And in 1832, this is part of the beginning of the Texas Insurrection, the San Felipe de Austin. They petitioned changes to the governance of Mexican Texas. What we don't talk about much in that part of our history is that really that was part of the battle around slavery. Mexico freed its slaves, the Texans wanted to keep their slaves, and there was a huge underpinning of the battle that began in 1832 in Texas. This was the day in 1890, Yosemite National Park was established by the U.S. Congress, and on this day in 2013, it was shut down.
It shut down.
This is the day in 1903 that the first World Series took place in between Boston Americans and the Pittsburgh Pirates. This is the day in 1908, Ford Model T came out in the market, $825, a huge sum of money in that day. This is the day that in 1918, the Arab forces under T.E. Lawrence, known as Lawrence of Arabia, captured Damascus, a time when there was no country called Syria, there was no country called Saudi Arabia, there was no Iraq. But this is the day the Arabs actually stood up and took back their own lands from the Ottomans. This is a day in 19... What are we going to do here? The Brooklyn Bridge was opened. The George Washington Bridge was opened in 1931 in New York City. In 1946, the Nazi leaders were sentenced at the Nuremberg trials. And the People's Republic of China had its revolution and established itself in 1949 on this day. And on this day in 1952, Joe Black became the first African-American pitcher to win a World Series game.
A Morgan alum.
Thank you. The Dodgers defeated the New York Yankees 4-2 that day. He was also named the 1952 Rookie of the Year. This is a day in 1957 that the first In God We Trust appeared on U.S. currency. People think it's ancient in American history. It's not. It's relatively new. This is a day in 1958 NASA was created. And this is a day in 2013 NASA was shut down. This is a day in 1960 that Nigeria became independent from the United Kingdom. This is the day in 1962 when Johnny Carson first jumped onto the air at the Tonight Show. And we'll wrap it up right here because we need to jump into our conversation. This is the day in 1962, though, that 12,000 federal soldiers had to restore order at the University of Mississippi campus. James Meredith had to be escorted in, registered at the University of Mississippi. A former major general in the U.S. Army, Edwin Walker, was arrested that day and charged with inciting insurrection. He led fellow troops during the Little Rock integration crisis, didn't want to, but he did, and then called for volunteers to oppose the federal forces in Mississippi in an armed insurrection. He said he led students in charges against the federal marches during campus riots. This is the day in 1964 the free speech movement was launched at Berkeley, the University of California, the beginnings of the modern student movement growing out of the civil rights movement in 1964. This day in 1966, the Black Panther Party was founded in Oakland by Huey Newton and Bobby Seale. And in 1975 took place the Thriller in Manila, where Muhammad Ali defeated Joe Frazier in that classic boxing match. This is a day that Sony launched its first computer disc player, changing the world and how we listen to music in 1982. And this is the day in 2013, the United States federal government shutdown begins, as does our conversation on that shutdown. We are joined here in studio once again by E.R. Shipp, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, journalist in residence, and associate professor of journalism at Morgan State University. Brad Jackson joins us, front page contributor to RedState.com, offer a host of coffee and markets. Imara Jones is back with us, economic justice contributor for ColorLines.com, who served in the Clinton White House. Jackie Wellfonder is with us, conservative activist and blogger, host of Raging Against Rhetoric Radio. And you are with us at 410-319-8888. Your thoughts? Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. There are several pieces there already, which I will be reading. And an email that came in as well, I'll be reading. Tweet us at Mark Steiner, but join us, 410-319-8888. I'd like to hear your thoughts. Maybe you're one of the laid-off federal workers on furlough. We hear your thoughts as well, 410-319-8888. Panel, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So let us begin with what we think this shutdown means and why is it here? Why do we have this? This could be a shutdown which much more profound effect on the American economy than the one that took place between Newt Gingrich and President Bill Clinton. Because the economy is weaker. This is kind of a deeper ideological battle than we've seen, I think, since before the Civil War, perhaps, in the United States Congress. So what do we think is happening here? Let me begin that with Brad Jackson.
Well, Mark, thanks for having me today, and I want to say it's an honor to be on a panel with a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. So, Ms. Shipp, thanks for having me here to talk with you. I appreciate
it. Well, thank you.
I think we've gotten here because both sides can't agree on anything. Imara mentioned this online the other day, that if we had just had a Congress that could pass actual budget bills instead of continuing CR after CR, that we wouldn't be in this situation, and I think he's right. But what we're facing now is a government that is closed, essentially because Republicans and Democrats couldn't agree on this funding measure. They have, of course, been battling back and forth for the last several weeks. It seems that both the White House and Harry Reid have laid down a marker that they are not going to allow any Obamacare changes as part of a deal here. And it seems like Republicans have thrown down their sword and said they are not going to let this go through unless there are some sort of Obamacare changes. So we've seen the House originally wanted a repeal as part of this. Obviously, that didn't work. So they threw in a defund request. That didn't work. So they threw in a delay request on Obamacare, and now we're back to the drawing board. I think part of this problem is that neither side of the Hill likes the other very well, and I think that's something that does not help the situation. Harry Reid had a bill on his desk late last week, but the Senate decided to take Sunday off and let the House deal with it, probably so everyone could watch the NFL. Unfortunately, your Ravens lost, which really didn't help my fantasy football team. So that was sad. But I think now it is up to the Senate and the House to come together. John Boehner said late last night, in the early morning hours this morning, actually, that the House was willing to have a conference committee to sit down with the Senate and work out a bill. For listeners that don't know, that is how most bills are worked out. The House will pass something, the Senate will pass something. They'll come together and they'll get appointees from both sides of the Hill and mash out something. That has not been done in this case, but it looks like the House is saying they are open to that. Harry Reid has said they will only do that if the House can first pass what is called a clean CR, or a bill funding the government that has no real attachments to it.
So let me quickly go to other panelists so we can jump into a discussion here and get to the phones. Shipp?
Well, I agree that this is basically the result of the two sides not being able to publicly reach agreement. I think there are a lot of things going on behind the scenes, and what people may be saying publicly may not exactly be what their real perspectives are behind the scenes. What's interesting is that, technically speaking, they're arguing about funding the government for another 6 weeks, I think, something like that. So obviously this fight is much bigger than the current funding bill that's before Congress. It's a lot of ideological posturing is going on. A lot of posturing for the next round of federal elections is going on. And in the meantime, while a lot of federal workers are being laid off today, told to go home, and some of them may or may not be paid ultimately, but they're being told to go home. While all that is going on, the thing that we're being told this is about, Obamacare, is actually beginning to take effect today in some ways. So it's actually...
Exchanges begin today.
Yes, this is an opportunity for people to actually sign up for insurance. It won't take effect until next year, but this is the day, October 1st, that Obamacare goes forward while the government takes a step backwards.
Jackie, and then we'll go to Amara.
Well, I again thank you for having me on this show. And I mean, I too am just very concerned about what I see going on. It just seems like there's a lot of misconceptions. And for me, the fact that less than 1 in 5 Americans say their families will be better off under the new care law is a big cause for concern. I also do think there's a lot of posturing on both sides, and it's kind of been a game of chicken that I think has failed. And, you know, the American people are going to suffer because of it. I don't think a shutdown was, you know, ultimately the best option. And I think we're kind of at an impasse, which is really unfortunate. And so I hope we'll be able to get somewhere with the conference committee.
Amara.
Well, I sadly don't think that it's a prize that we're here at all. I think that we are here because this is exactly where the Tea Party wanted us to end up. They've been very clear since getting elected in 2010 where they wanted to take the country, the things that they thought that were important. A large part of that class that was elected both years because of redistricting, they came from conservative districts this last year, believe that their job is to go to Washington, not to make government work, but to actually stand by their beliefs, which are at their root and core anti-government. And particularly prosperity, which is sort of the founding flower, as it were, of the Tea Party movement, is founded by the Koch brothers. And one of their disappointments and one of the things that fuels their particular perspective is that they believe that the Bush administrations, both Bush administrations, but particularly the elder Bush administration, which one of them was a part of through education, believes that the Republican Party cuts too many deals and has cut too many deals and has made it their point of view to end that in the party. And the problem is that with the destruction of the Bush political machine in the mid-2000s, the Tea Party has the energy. That's where the drive comes from, the Republican Party. What's interesting is the degree to which when you see people at the microphone, it's mostly the new members or those that are affiliated with the Tea Party, the old guard of the Republican Party that you're used to hearing from Mitch McConnell, like, are totally sidelined in this. And that's because, as the president accurately described, a minority of a minority in one branch of the House is driving the bus. And it's about 40 to 80 members. But as long as John Boehner has said he's going to be captive to them by insisting that he has a majority of Republicans, or rather getting all of the 217 votes that he needs in the House in order to get votes passed, they're going to drive the bus. And I don't think that it should be a surprise that we're going to collide up against the debt limit and the debt crisis. And we're just going to have to see. But this is not a surprise. This is where we've been headed. It's where many of them believe that we should go. One last thing, and then I'm going to, you know, get off.
You don't
want to
turn into Mr. Cruz,
you know,
here.
Marsha Blackburn said 2 days ago, she's a leading conservative. She got on the floor and said, you know, let them shut it down, because she has a titanium or a platinum spine, and that she could take whatever hits. So they're dug in. They're prepared for the long haul. It's a surprise for all of us. It's not a surprise to them. They're controlling it, and we'll just have to see how far it goes.
So let me just throw this out here. I mean, I think because we can all – there are polls and there are polls. I mean, the one poll at Quinnipiac shows that 45% of Americans support Obamacare, 47% don't. Other polls show a much larger group of people who don't like Obamacare, but a vast majority of Americans do oppose what they see as a Republican-led shutdown of the government as well. And interestingly enough, 17% of those who oppose, who think Obamacare may not live up to everything it's supposed to do, are Democrats who are solidly in the single-payer camp who think it's not going to work. So it's a very mixed kind of issue here. But the reality is that Obamacare was passed, that most people want to see it implemented in most of the polls because they're waiting for it to start. Even though they're not sure about it.
And well, it's that people don't understand it yet, I think.
Nobody understands it. Even Congress didn't understand half of it when it was done, I think. But the issue is that is Obamacare is not the issue. I think, isn't this not just, as Amara was just saying, this is, I mean, three out of the four of you said on this panel, it's because Congress can't agree. But Amara is saying, and let's push this for argument for a minute, this is about a major ideological split over what the role of government should be. And the Tea Party was elected. Numbers were elected in the last congressional election. And who do not want government, who want to shut it down, who think it needs to be smaller. That's what's happening here. Can we just be real about what's happening and not play these games about, you know, Congress is not agreeing? Brad?
Well, that's why they aren't agreeing, though, because of the ideological divide here. They've come in saying their intention is never to agree on anything. So I don't think the four of us are saying anything all that differently. It's not just they aren't agreeing. They aren't agreeing because they have this ideological position. And the Tea Party folk believe that they have the moral authority in this case. So they're taking it to that level. It's not just politics for them. It's the morality. It's the future of the country and all of that.
Brad?
Well, I think that's difficult to say.
What's difficult to say?
Obviously, there is a harsh partisan divide here. But as you mentioned, when you look at these polls, and you can look at a lot of them, most Americans are unsettled about Obamacare. They're not necessarily in favor of it. We've even had the Teamsters come out and say, look, there's a problem with this. This is going to destroy the 40-hour work week, which has been a cornerstone of the American dream. It's something we need to take a look at. I think Americans do want some sort of further examination of Obamacare. Was this the means for Republicans to force that? Perhaps not. I think Americans, and we've seen this, no matter what the polling says, Americans do not want a government shutdown. And I think both Republicans and Democrats would have rather avoided that. You mentioned Ted Cruz. He was on CNN yesterday and said, look, I don't want a government shutdown. Harry Reid was on and said, I don't want a government shutdown. Barack Obama said, I don't want a government shutdown. Nobody wanted this.
Can we just interrupt you, Brad? Just a quick question. I mean, when you see things are being written in columns that are – we can argue about Obamacare in the days to come here on the show, just really have a talk about what it really means from all perspectives. But the reality is that I still think we're playing word games here. The majority of people who are kind of on the right in the Republican Party, as opposed to liberal, moderate Democrats, don't believe government should do what it's doing. This is part of a battle to change the nature of government, and we're not putting that on the table. We're playing these kind of Capitol Hill games about, oh, well, we don't agree on this, and let's compromise on Obamacare. That's not the reality.
But one of the things that they're doing is that they are saying it, Mark, and they are saying it with their actions, not their words.
Let me just let Brad finish his statement, and please jump right in, okay? Brad.
The moral issue, then well, they wouldn't be say, risking.
We have to do one at a time.
Okay, Amara, go for it.
Go on, Amara. One at a time.
Five times in the last 3 days on ways to shut down the government by attaching it to Obamacare. So I do think that they are saying it. They're not saying it with their lips, but they are saying it with their votes.
Brad, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I can't hear Amara very well, but I will say I think this is, as you mentioned, there is a difference in what each party thinks government should do. Republicans in general and the Tea Party more specifically believe government should do less. And I think we saw that spelled out in the 2010 elections. There were people who said, look, I think the government is doing too much, or the government is not doing the right things. We've seen both the rise of the Tea Party movement on the right and the anti-Wall Street movement on the left. I think we're at a point in American politics where neither side is really happy with what their government is doing.
So we have a, you know, what this furlough also means, let me talk about this impasse means in real numbers, though, as well. It means 800,000 federal workers are going to be furloughed, and more than a million others will be asked to work without pay. All the federal parks are shut down. It means that, and we shut down, it means that while you'll get Social Security checks, they might be late, and nobody else can kind of register for Social Security or Medicare. And this is that the defense will be stymied because the civilian employees that are the backbone of part of the Pentagon are going to be furloughed as well. I mean, this is, and it's, we're going to be, this is going to deeply affect the American economy, as most papers on the right, left, and establishment have been saying, that that's going to affect the economy. This is a serious crisis America's facing, Chip.
Yeah, it's really also going to affect Washington, D.C. as a city, because its existence is at the hands of the congressional action in many ways. Unless they are able to rely upon a special fund, they won't even be able to pick up garbage in the nation's capital until this thing is over. It's going to affect people, and I think once it starts hurting us, then maybe those people who are so apathetic until now will become more interested and will indeed begin to exert some kind of pressure on their elected officials, one way or the other, to take some action. I think to some extent this has been a kind of theoretical fight, a political, ideological fight that has nothing to do with everyday existence for many people. Now it will begin to become real. And at this point, I think the American public will become more engaged in the conversation.
I actually think Ms. Shipp is right. Let's jump in here for just a second. I think she's right. It was really a theoretical fight coming into last night. People were saying, we could shut down. This is what may happen. And she's right. Now people are going to see what does happen. And in the end, I think both sides are going to say, we don't want this to go on any longer. And I imagine they will come to a deal here shortly. I'd be surprised if this lasted any longer than a week.
Jackie, before we go to break?
Well, I think there already has been pressure exerted on elected officials, and that's why people on the Republican side are, you know, taking the stand that they're taking. And I also think it's a bit of a stereotype to say that Tea Party people are anti-government, because I think there's a big difference between being anti-government and limited government. And, I mean, the option was presented to, you know, still fund the government, but to simply delay this by a year or delay the individual mandate for a year. It just seems like there's no meeting in the middle here.
Well, the Tea Party doesn't want to meet in the middle.
Sometimes they're not two sides, though. I have to say that. And I really get frustrated on this point. Sometimes they're not two sides. And it's one of the reasons why that Harry Reid has stepped up and said that there actually is no negotiation on this, that there are certain things where it's not about meeting in the middle, because the other side, there is no middle for the other side. There is no give. There is no comeback. And that if we begin to go down this road where the government is constantly held hostage by a minority in power because of some policy that they didn't get, if we set the precedent that every time we lose on a major issue, on guns, if we lost the issue on a whole host of other things, that one of the minority parties is going to take the government hostage in order to advance an agenda, we cannot run a country like that. That is totally inimical to our system, our constitutional system, and to democracy. And if we start down this road, then we'll never come back.
And we're going to take a brief break.
Not two sides.
On that note, we take a break, come right back, and rejoin this conversation. First two callers up are Bruce and Benjamin. We'll read a Facebook page comment from Don, who is a Vietnam vet and retired postal worker from Michigan. Read his piece, and then two other email pieces that came up. Stay with us as we look and continue to talk about the shutdown of the American government. We'll be right back.
I've been so many places in my life and time. I've sung a lot of songs. I've made some bad ones. I've acted out my life in stages with 10,000 people watching. But we're alone now, and I'm singing this song to you. I know your image of me is what I hope to.
Donna Hathaway, born on this day in 1945. Maybe we'll get more done if we just listen to Donny Hathaway. I don't know. So
maybe Congress can listen to it.
Maybe Congress can listen to it and get a little bit more done. We don't know. Join us here at 410-319-8888 here with Jackie Welfonder, conservative activist, blogger, host of Raging Against Rhetoric Radio, Brad Jackson, front page contributor at redstate.com, host of Coffee and Markets, Imara Jones, economic justice contributor for colorlines.com, noted writer, served in the Clinton White House, E.R. Schiff, Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, and journalist in residence here at Morgan State University, where she's also an assistant professor of journalism. 410-319-8888. Let's get a couple of very quick calls in. Let me read this one Facebook piece and come right back to our conversation. Bruce, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. How you guys doing?
Very well.
You know, I'm kind of laughing to myself. So do some of the right, do some of the Tea Party possibly, so your guess says that they're moralizing. They're always trying to take the higher moral ground. So the left does it too. So the thing is, I don't agree with all the Tea Party people. I agree with a lot of it, but here's the point. So the left doesn't demonize the Tea Party. The left doesn't demonize the NRA or gun rights people. Give me a break. Hypocrites. Have some character. Have some integrity.
Thank you, Bruce. 410-319-8888. Let's see what we got from Benjamin. Benjamin, you're on the air.
Listen, if you go back and listen to what the president indicated, that the House really is not really working with the president on anything anyway, because you got those people that I say people. They're not people. They're demonic. That they're going in. They don't like the president's policy. They don't like the Obamacare. They don't like the Affordable Care. They don't like the people. So they are trying to overthrow Obamacare. But he indicated anyway that he was doing everything he could to win the House. This is it. This is the first day of the fiscal year coming in 2014. This is the best time for him to show his strategy. You know, the president is not as dumb as he was, very shrewd. And if you read in like a, I mean, dressed like a chief of him, holding chiefs in wolf clothing, okay, that's what they are. And what is happening in the House, those people up there are doing everything they can possibly do to stand ground this man because they don't like him in the office, period. Anything he try to go up and put him in effect for the people, they go against him. Now, what's going to happen is he's going to win the House and he's going to win the Senate, too. But that's all it is. That's a strategy, high poker game. That's all it is. Thank you, Mark. God bless you.
Thank you, Benjamin, for joining us. Let's read this Facebook page and jump back to our conversation here to respond to our listeners. Don Green, a retired postal worker, Vietnam vet from Michigan, writes in, I'm wondering what it will be the next time. Will they not agree to raise the debt limit unless the voting rights bill is defunded? Or maybe after that, the Consumer Protection Bureau. Tea Party types hate that, too. In the following years, we can look forward to them refusing to fund the government unless the Department of Education is defunded. The Affordable Care Act was passed by Congress, signed by the president, validated by the Supreme Court, and validated by the electorate, by the way. The fact that a bunch of congressmen elected by their gerrymandered districts can dictate to the country their demonstrably minority views is insane. This is not a legislative process. It's an attempted coup. It's insane. It's insane. Let me repeat. It's insane.
I agree with that. Very well said. But the question is, what do we do now? We can watch from a distance as we see the various maneuverings going on in public. But as I said, I think there is something going on behind the scene because there's so many Republicans who don't agree with this strategy. So I think that they're going to have to eventually exert some kind of authority. Now, how long would they make us wait for this? I think the shutdown in the 1970s went on for a few weeks. So we might be in for something like that.
It was 20 days. I think the last big shutdown was a 20-day shutdown of the federal government. Jackie, you want to jump into the response to some of these listeners?
Well, I think that one of the problems started in the very beginning with us being told that we have to pass the bill to find out what is in it. And the problem is, now that we're finding out more about it, people that previously supported it, like the AFL-CIO, are saying it's being implemented in a way that's highly disruptive and it's driving up costs. So I think people that were huge supporters of the president and supporters, you know, originally of the Affordable Care Act are finding out the name is a misnomer because it's not as affordable as promised.
Imara?
Jackie does have a point there. We've seen Senator Joe Manchin, a Democrat from West Virginia, come out and say that he thinks there should be changes, and he would even be open to delaying the individual mandate. As I mentioned earlier, the Teamsters have come out and said they think it should be reexamined. I think as Americans see the impact during this rollout of how it hit them, the reduction of hours they've had at their jobs, UPS and Delta have decided they're going to reduce the insurance options they're providing their employees. I do think that Americans are not liking the run-up to Obamacare that they have seen. And I think, as Jackie noted, we were supposed to pass it to find out what is in it. And I think now some people that they see what's in it and how that's affecting them don't really like the result.
Tomorrow?
You know, I've been around politics for since the 1990s, and I haven't seen a bill that doesn't have problems. I haven't seen a law that doesn't have problems. Not one. One of the biggest messes was under George Bush during the Medicare expansion. We gave a giant $400 billion giveaway to the drug companies in order to provide pharmaceuticals to seniors, which was necessary, without paying for it. And that was a huge mess. And the Democrats didn't like it, and they fought it tooth and nail. And the Republicans had to move heaven and earth in order to keep the vote open for 30 minutes or whatever they used to do in order to pass it. And they passed it. And then the Democrats eventually said, okay, you know what? We're going to go along with it. We're going to let our constituents know that it's available. And then we're going to fix it. And then they did do just that in this healthcare law. They fixed the thing that we didn't like about it. But we can't have a government that every time that there's a bill or a law that has a problem with it, that we're going to threaten to deny 9 million women and children nutrition, which happened today because WIC ran out of money, that we're not going to process FHA loans that helps first-time home buyers get mortgages. That's 40% of all mortgages that are issued. That we're not going to allow millions of people to get access to higher education through student loans. And the list goes on and on and on. 70 in Maryland is shut down. That's monitoring for infectious diseases. And the list goes on and on and on. And so if we want to have a government like this, then let us get in the minority next time. And we'll see how you like it when there's an attempt to try to do something on guns, or when there's an attempt to try to do a whole host of things that the other side believes that are moral. But you can't run a government like this. And there's no law that's perfect, and there never is. But we have a system. And this is one of the things that concern the very way that the other side is behaving, that the Tea Party, it's not even the other side. I wish it were the old Republican Party. It's a Tea Party. This is one of the things that the founding fathers feared most. If you go back and read the Federalist Papers, and particularly Madison, and he said, we've got to come up with a system that we are able to have angry differences and fight it out, but that at the end is seen legitimate, so that we have a process that by the end, everyone has had their say. It's been angry, it's been nasty, it's been not necessarily palatable, but it's deemed to be legitimate. And what the Tea Party is doing is saying that the process is no longer legitimate, and that's what's so dangerous.
Let's go back to the phones. Jack, you have a quick thought before we go back to the phones?
Well, basically, I just think, you know, the House offered options. They offered two different options, and then they sent the second one back again. And I think, you know, they've offered changes, but the Senate has drawn a clear line and said no.
But okay, is it fair, really, Jackie, to say that the Senate's drawn the line? The House drew a line. Everybody drew a line. See, we keep saying the partisan world makes it.
I apologize as well. I think they both certainly drew a line, but I'm seeing the House offering, you know, making amendments to what they originally wanted and, you know, offering, okay, can we do a delay? They've made some changes to what their original hopes and goals were, but I haven't seen that from the Senate yet.
I guess the issue that Amara raised earlier, and I'd like to kind of push for a moment before we read this tweet coming in, and Vera, you're the next caller, we're going to come to your call, is that the Affordable Care Act, whether you agree or disagree with the act, because you believe that there should be Medicare for all, or you believe there should be just a free marketplace and the government shouldn't be in it, whatever your views are, it is the law upheld by the Supreme Court. It seems to me that in some ways, Brad, it's being held hostage at this moment. Is that the way our process is supposed to work?
Well, I think you have to look at this a little bit more broadly than that. Obama himself has delayed portions of this law and given waivers to certain people because he has admitted it hasn't gone as expected. Max Baucus, the man who drafted this law in the Senate, called it an absolute train wreck and is retiring this cycle because he doesn't want to have to deal with it.
That may be one of the reasons, but there may be other reasons he's retiring as well. So let's not put it all there.
But Jackie is right. I mean, Americans are seeing this, and as it gets closer and closer and as more companies are having to deal with this, they don't like it as much. I know, I personally get my insurance for our family through my wife's company, and they have told us that our insurance rates are going to go up dramatically next year. We are trying to have a second kid, and if we do, that kid's going to cost us significantly more than the current cute little guy I got running around.
So, Brad, one of the things you and me can do and join us another day is to argue this out, because many people are arguing now, that part of the problem is that the American government's doing nothing to control health care costs, which again would be an ideological debate on what happens to control the marketplace or not, because every insurance company is raising rates.
Yes.
They would do it with or without the Affordable Care Act, and they're doing it willy-nilly everywhere. I mean, it happened to me the other day. I went to get a prescription. 2 months ago, it was $300. This month, $500. I mean, it's happening everywhere. So I think that's part of what we're facing. Another day for that. Let me read this tweet and then go to Vera. I know that, Chip, you got a roll here in a couple of minutes. John Schwartz tweeted in, "Let's start another government while this one is turned off. And then when they turn this one back on, we can go like, nah, we're cool." So 410-319-8888. And Vera in Odenton, you're on the air.
I just want to make a quick comment. You know, I'm a nurse, and I have worked in the emergency room before. If you see people with cancer and other chronic diseases have to go through the emergency room in order to force the healthcare system to take care of them, that is a problem. I know everyone is saying Obamacare this, Obamacare that, and I really don't like that name, Obamacare. It's the Affordable Care Act. I hope you address it that way. And you see the amount of bills that hospitals have incurred because people do not have insurance. And that cost is spread for all of us to pay. If people will realize that, especially people in government will realize that, they will take a better stand on this whole issue. They will think through it before start making these decisions. If they have to go through the emergency room to get care, I'm sure they will, you know, finally say, you know what, we really need to make a difference here. We really need to rethink this. So it's about time for them to play fair and allow other people to get the care they need. You know, everyone needs some form of health insurance. Health insurance is a right. It is not a luxury. When there was a law for people to get car insurance, I didn't see anyone jumping up and down. Everybody has car insurance. Why do you have car insurance? What's the point in having car insurance? So that you are protected. So therefore, people need health insurance to be protected. If you have car insurance, you need health insurance. That's my take.
Vera, thank you so much. Appreciate the call. And Ship, you want to respond before you have to
Well, I just wanted to say Congress knows all of what you just said. Congress knows that those people who are uninsured rely upon emergency rooms for their primary care, essentially. They know that. And that argument apparently is not persuasive enough to them to at least let the Affordable Care Act go forth and be amended as necessary. They don't care.
Chip, thanks for joining us. I know you have a class and a guest speaker, so appreciate you taking the time today. Let's get back before we go to our next caller, Sheldon in Pikesville at 410-319-8888. Imar, you want to leap in and talk a bit about what you heard the caller just say?
Well, I think that she's right, but, you know, this is, once again, this has never been about the substance. This is always about ideology. It's not about the substance of the Obamacare. One of the reasons why we say it is that Obama himself embraced the name. He said, "My name is Barack Obama, and I do care." So, yeah, I think that is one of the, it's not about substance of the act. It's not about the substance of the economy. If those two things were actually the drivers, then we wouldn't be in this. This is about ideology. And as long as it's an ideological fight, these substantive things that she's talking about won't necessarily hold the day. And by the way, just to return to an earlier point, one of the reasons why the Obama administration has given these waivers is because they don't have a Congress that's willing to work with them in order to change the law in a way that makes sense. So he wants to go back and change some of the things that clearly are problematic. That doesn't mean that the entire thing is bad. It means that there's some things that need to be worked out. But he knows that that the Tea Party, if they reintroduce if he reintroduces a bill, that they're going to do what they're trying to do now, which is take it hostage and use it to advance a whole host of things. And so, I mean, we're in a really bad place because this is about ideology. It's not about substance.
Brad, do you want to jump in, or Jackie?
Yeah, I actually don't think that's entirely true. I agree with Amara that some of it is about about partisanship and about the differences there. But Jackie and I think have both mentioned, and I think you can't gloss over the fact that there have been negative impacts on the American people because of the rollout of this law. You've seen plenty of folks have their hours cut down below 30 hours so that their companies don't have to incur these extra costs. And that means, you know, the single moms trying to support their kids with a job at Olive Garden all of a sudden have to have two jobs instead of one job in order to make up for that difference. And that's a real tangible impact that Americans are seeing. And I think in some sense, whether you're Ted Cruz arguing about this or you're Joe Manchin, a Democrat, arguing about this, you're seeing that people are wanting to reexamine this. Perhaps the way Republicans went about this with the with throwing down the gauntlet over the CR may not have been the right way to do it. I think more Americans were willing to see this fight play out during the debt ceiling debate here in a couple weeks, at least according to some polls I have seen, than people were willing to see it during this continuing resolution showdown. But I think Jackie can probably speak more to the sort of impacts we see here that you know, we hear of.
Jackie, go ahead, then we'll go back to the phone to tomorrow. Jackie, you there?
Yes.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, sorry, can you hear me?
Yes.
I would just say that I agree that it's definitely, there is substance there. It's not just entirely ideology. And I think the fact that, you know, offering the option to just simply delay key portions of Obamacare while things are being worked out is indicative of that, you know, shutdown isn't an alternative that's favorable. Now, I will say I had friends on the Red Maryland Network talking about this last night, and I would make the concession that I think part of the problem on the GOP side is that they haven't really offered a viable solution yet. I think reform is definitely needed. I mean, definitely there's changes that need to happen. But it doesn't appear that Obamacare is the answer. And already we're seeing, I mean, the president has said there would be months of glitches with this rollout. And so there's a lot of people that just feel that it's not ready for prime time yet.
So Amara, go ahead.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing is that all of the glitches are being highlighted to the area of nuclear war, and all of the things that are broad and good are not even mentioned at all. What about 71 million people already who, under the act, are able to get free preventative care? What about the fact that women, for the first time, won't be charged different rates of insurance because that they are women? Before, being a woman was listed by insurance companies as being as a quote pre-existing condition. What about the fact that the people who have chronic diseases that particularly impact the working poor and people of color and women, diabetes, heart disease, all of the rest of it, those people can now get health insurance? What about the fact that 20 million people, 20 million kids or people under the age of 25 are able to stay on their parents' insurance and be covered? What about the fact that the premiums in ironically, the exchanges that are run by the federal government, not by the states, but by the federal government, are cheaper? That for a family of four on $40,000 a year, they can get a plan in Florida now today for $30 a month, when that was impossible before. And so, you know, all of the things that are actually moving the needle and helping people are the things that are never mentioned. But the fact that there's a technical problem on the website, or the fact that certain employers are making decisions to transition their employees to Obamacare or to the exchanges, is highlighted as a problem. But why are they doing that? Because they've been able to, on the exchange, you can get better plans for less price. That's one of the reasons why Walgreens is moving their people to exchanges, because they weren't able to negotiate better deals. And so it's just not, I don't believe it's a totally, once again, it's not about substance, because we were having a substantive argument. They would say, you know what, they're all, here are some things that I need to be fixed, and so we need to go fix those. But no, it's a one-sided argument in order to advance an ideology.
Let me go to the phones here. 410-319-8888. Sheldon, you're on the air.
Hi. There is a constitutional solution to the Tea Party problem, and that's to elect representatives at large. The Constitution does not require congressional districts. It requires that representatives be elected on the basis of population. It's in the political interest of both parties to gerrymander. My district, the 3rd Congressional District in Maryland, is a prime example of Democratic gerrymandering. Is a constitutional solution that would eliminate the problem. Is it doable? I don't know. But there is a solution. We don't need to live with gerrymandering.
My producer's listening to me. That could be a show for another day. I think that's an important show to talk about our voting system in America. We haven't done one in a while. We need to go back to that. Floyd, you're on the air. Floyd, welcome. You're on the air.
Yes. Now, something that's been bothering me is that nobody seems to pay attention to the fact that if you were watching for the last couple of days, everyone who showed up out of that Republican meeting was grinning like a Cheshire cat. They said from the beginning of 2009 that it was just to make Obama one term. When they lost that fight, what they have turned around and done, and I hate to say it, is that we're going to go and shut down the government. That's not going to help anything. That's not going to help anybody. So what I'm trying to understand is why nobody's touching on the fact that the only reason they have this power is because of the redistricting with the Koch brothers' money, the people like, from, I hate to say it, with the pointy hats and the John Birch Society, redistricting, getting the representatives in Congress that they could do this kind of thing. And, I don't like to say this country is going down the hole, but it looks like that, because their whole attitude now towards the American public and everybody, especially people of my color, is that you got your loose-fitting shoes, you got a warm place to take a number two, you ain't got nothing else coming.
Floyd.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Floyd. And let's get another quick thought. We have like 5 minutes left, so I want to get back to our guests. But Stephen Waverly, have your quick say. Welcome.
Yes, I just wanted to make a comment and ask the panelists why folks are so quick to apologize or make an excuse that this debate is centered around Republicans are blocking, that it's an ideology, and that single payer, which a lot of folks on the left who are in favor of, and it's always this thing about, well, Obama can't do it because of the Tea Party. Well, if Obama made a call and said, I call all people who want universal health care to come to D.C. to go to the Capitol and demand, I guarantee you millions of people. And so, I mean, there are people on the left who think that Obamacare thinks is nothing but a wrapped up package of the same Hillary and Clinton deal that was a giveaway to the big insurance companies. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Well, let's have our final thoughts on this, and I'll start with we have like 4.5 minutes left. Jackie, then we'll go to Brad and wind up with Amara, but very quick thoughts. Jackie.
Well, I would just say that overall, I hate to see stereotyping happen coming from either side, and, you know, I'm just hearing a lot of that, and I just think it's simply inaccurate to say that Republicans as a whole wanted this shut down, because many of them spoke out and clearly said they did not. And also, as far as a 30-day month plan for a family of four, again, there's a lot we don't know. Obama said 6 out of 10 can get covered for less than $100 a month, which is less than a cell phone bill. But what's not made clear is that the cheapest of the four options, the bronze plan, and people will have to pay 40% out of pocket through deductibles and copay. So I think overall, we're just not seeing the clear picture here.
Brad?
We've talked about this. I think it is not solely an argument about ideology. I think there are real factual concerns behind this. We've had Americans with a negative impact of this law so far as it's rolled out, and I think in some sense both Republicans and Democrats are saying that it's time to reexamine that. Was this the best way for Republicans to go about that? Perhaps, perhaps not. But I do think it is going to at least spur the conversation on changes to the president's signature law.
Amara Jones.
The Tea Party has hijacked the government of the United States in order to advance a position, an ideological position, on a law that has been deemed legal by every branch of government under the Constitution. That's a horrible precedent. It does not bode well for the future of the country and the political process that we need to have in order to have the type of country that we all want to live in, and that it's probably going to get worse before it gets better, both on this shutdown and in the political system, before we realize that this is no way to run an advanced country, an advanced economy, the oldest democracy on earth. It cannot be continued to be hijacked in order to advance a single ideology on a single bill that is legal.
First, I want to thank all of you for joining us. This is just the beginning. We'll be covering this over the next days, and as long as this goes on, in different aspects of it, to help our listeners kind of discuss it with each other and with our guests. I want to thank E.R. Shipp, who had to leave to go teach a class, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist here at Morgan State University, Brad Jackson, front-page contributor, to redstate.com and host of Coffee and Markets, Jackie Wellfounder, a conservative activist and blogger, host of Raging Against Rhetoric Radio, and Imara Jones joins us once again, economic justice contributor for Call Lines, noted writer and served in the Clinton White House. Thank you all so much for being with us.
Thanks, Mark. Thank you. Appreciate it.
It's been a great conversation. We will continue this tomorrow, maybe picking up on the Obamacare idea. We're going to take a brief break. When we do come back, we're going to take a look at our weekly segment called Soundbites, looking at the future of the food system, look at what happened with SNAP benefits and more coming up there. I'm reminding you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com or jump onto steinershow.org and click on their banner there. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. And reminding you as well that support for WEAA, where the Mark Steiner Show is hosted from, is provided by Luna. Information on flooring available at luna.com/traffic or at 877-241-LUNA. We'll be right back with Sound Bites. Don't go away.
I'm not a juvenile delinquent.